What tonight's broadcast is going to be is the third and concluding chapter, episode, what have you, of an archive show called, that I'm going to entitle, The Seeds of Nuremberg. Basically, when you plant a seed, it grows, and if that seed happens to be a weed seed, then you can wind up with some pretty nasty things in your garden. And I'm afraid the Garden of Humanity is anything but a Garden of Eden at this point, and we have some truly serious weeds to be pulled, and if they're not pulled pretty soon, well, things are going to get rather nasty indeed. I'm going to give you a quick rundown of what it is that we're going to be listening to on tonight's program. There is a new Germany Alert newsletter out, and as is generally the case with Germany Alert, it is packed full of absolutely spectacular information. Regular listeners know that the last 2 weeks I have been afflicted with laryngitis, or the previous 2 weeks, so my contribution to the PR sensation or the media blitz concerning the Normandy invasion D-Day is going to be delayed by a week, and that's fortunate, because among the things that are going to be in tonight's program is an interesting little item from Germany Alert concerning D-Day. Helmut Kohl was on under a great deal of pressure from the fascist elements in Germany, which are in control, contrary to what one hears in the American media, to do something to avenge what the Germans viewed as a snub of their situation with the Allies celebrating the Normandy invasion. So what Helmut Kohl did was he took D-Day and announced that on that day that Germany and France are going to build a joint navy. The project will begin in December, and there will be a complete merger of the French and German navies within 5 years, thus indicating that what Hitler sought and achieved temporarily with his military and his military-style invasion by the Wehrmacht has now been achieved through economic hegemony and diplomacy. And so once again, Germany is in military control of France. And as Helmut Kohl put it to one of the aides who was pressuring him, of the Allies at Normandy, quote, while they celebrate the past, we will announce the future, unquote. And indeed, what I'm going to be doing is, on this broadcast, as is so often the case, is exploring the past and the present, particularly the past's implications for the present, and taking a look toward what figures to be an exceedingly bleak future for humanity, barring drastic changes. We're going to kick off with the merger of the French and German navies and Helmut Kohl's observation. While they celebrate the past, we will announce the future. Among the things that has contributed mightily to the growing situation of Germany with regard to the European Union and the European community, and that has contributed to the slide of America into fascism, was the incorporation of much of the Third Reich's national security establishment into the American national security establishment at the end of World War II. Someone who has descended from that phenomenon is the current chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General John Shalakashvili. His father served with the Wehrmacht and later the Waffen-SS, and ironically enough, his father was assigned to a German unit that was fighting the Allies at D-Day. John Shalakashvili, of course, accompanied Bill Clinton and engaged in the Allied celebration of D-Day. And the irony of General Shalakashvili's situation is indeed a considerable one. And the irony of John Shalakashvili and his father, Dmitry Shalakashvili, has led directly to the brutal, searing irony of a strong, united, albeit corrupt and fascistic Germany moving to dominate right now Europe, then eventually, I suspect, the former Soviet Union, Asia, and ultimately the entire world. The phenomenon of the incorporation of the Third Reich's national security establishment, or much of it, into our own, continues not only to haunt the United States directly, but to crop up in the news. This past week, there was an allegation on an ABC broadcast called Day One that the CIA helped protect General Wilhelm Mohnke, a general who was charged with massacring American POWs at the Malmedy massacre. He was, according to Day One, protected by the CIA from prosecution for war crimes because of information he had to contribute about the Soviet Union. The CIA has denied that. I'm not in a position to comment directly on whether Mohnke was used by the CIA, but if in fact he wasn't, certainly a great many other war criminals certainly were. And the denial by the CIA is pro forma under the circumstances and consequently worthless, whether or not it is true. There is also an op-ed column that appeared in the New York Times not too long ago, specifically May 24th, talking about Kurt Waldheim, former German officer, participant in some of the anti-partisan campaigns that were conducted against the Yugoslavian partisans in World War II. Also an individual who appears to have played a part in the liquidation of European Jewry, and an individual who, according to some, was protected by the CIA. We will then take a look at one of the many weeds that has sprung from the seeds that were sown at Nuremberg and the incomplete, I would say farcical, alleged persecution of Nazism in the docks at Nuremberg. Fascism is alive and well and resurgent all over Europe. In fact, this past week, although I'm not going to go into it this evening, the head of the EC even commented that fascism was resurgent in Europe and represented a danger to Europe. This reported in the Los Angeles Times a little over a week ago. This past summer, that is to say the summer of 1993, I discussed an item that was carried in the aforementioned Germany Alert newsletter, namely the renaming of the now independent Croatia's currency after the kuna. That was the Croatian currency during the World War II period when the brutal Ustashi fascist puppet regime held sway in Croatia. Those same elements are resurgent now in the now independent Croatia. Their support by Germany, the European community, and Europe had did much to precipitate a resumption of the bloodletting that has characterized the Balkans for so much of their recent history. More on the subject of the legacy of fascism in World War II for the Balkans and the former Yugoslavia, a letter to the New York Times from May 12th of 1994, someone denying an assertion that appeared in an op-ed column, or actually a letter, that the Serbs did not experience a Holocaust at the hands of the Ustashi in World War II. Indeed, the Catholic Ustashi, supported by the Vatican and the Third Reich, combined with Bosnian Muslims in the World War II period, also supported by the Third Reich, to fight against the Serbian partisans and to liquidate Serbs, or to fight against the Yugoslavian partisans, I should say, and to liquidate Serbs. We're going to be taking a look at the Croatian Minister of Education, Milan Budak, for whom a street in Zagreb was renamed shortly after the government of Franjo Tudjman took over, although later that decision was reversed. Mr. Budak, who drew up the laws under which the liquidations of Jews, Gypsies, Serbs, etc. was conducted in World War II Croatia, he said that Croatia was to be a state of two religions, Roman Catholicism and Islam. And indeed, the Third Reich's and fascism's associations with elements of the Islamic fundamentalist movement, the Palestinian national movement, go back to the World War II period. We've dealt with that at great length, and I'll enumerate some of the archival references during the course of the program. An echo from that past, the Iranians are shipping supplies to the Bosnian Muslims through, surprise, surprise, Croatia. We've looked at Iranian BND, that is the German intelligence service, that grew out of the Gehlen organization in the past. Following that, we're going to return to the Germany Alert newsletter, the latest edition, and we're going to be taking a look at the deep involvement of German Nazis with their intelligence agencies. Indeed, the allegation of the denazification of Germany, as we have seen in numerous archive shows, is a myth. And the German national security establishment, the German Nazi parties, and their political and economic establishments work hand in hand. We're going to take a look, first of all, at cooperation between the Deutsche Volksunion of Gerhard Frey and Klaus Kinkel's FDP, one of the major political parties in Germany. Klaus Kinkel is the German foreign minister, former head of the BND, and there is rumination in this particular article that, in fact, Gerhard Frey, an individual who stretches back all the way from the underground Nazi government that survived World War II and was proved to be operating very effectively in post-war, then West Germany, Gerhard Frey stretches all the way from that underground Nazi government, descended largely from Goebbels' propaganda ministry, all the way on up through the Cold War period and the assassination of President Kennedy, right on up to the present. There is speculation that Gerhard Frey actually works for BND. Gerhard Frey's fascist DVU and the Republikaner Party, the Republican Party headed up by former SS non-com Franz Schoenhuber, were, as we have seen in a previous edition of Germany Alert, involved in working with BND to reinstitute Nazi influence in the former Eastern Europe, the former Warsaw Pact states, and the former Soviet Union. East Prussia is being reconstituted as fast as the Germans can do it, and we're going to take a look at an article next about the BND in Kaliningrad, which the Germans are now trying to turn back into Königsberg, the former capital of East Prussia. After that, we're going to look at a truly shocking example, although not one that is, unfortunately, one that is not unusual, of collaboration between the German intelligence services and the so-called neo-Nazis or skinheads. There's been a lot of publicity about the firebombing in Solingen in Germany that killed five Turkish nationals. And, actually, I shouldn't say Turkish families. They might actually have been German citizens, but, five people of Turkish extraction were killed in this firebomb attack. There was a fair amount of publicity over that, but what has not received publicity is that that German Nazi group was trained by the Verfassungsschutz and the German police. The Verfassungsschutz, one of Germany's domestic intelligence services. This is not unusual, and after taking a look at the Verfassungsschutz involvement in the training of the Nazi murderers from Solingen, we're going to take a look at an item we've dealt with before. This is information from the book The New Reich by Michael Schmidt, and we're going to take a look at a previous example of Verfassungsschutz collaboration with German so-called neo-Nazi terror. Specifically, we're going to take a look at the Sportgruppe Hoffmann, an institution, a German Nazi group with strong connections both to the Middle East and to fascist elements in Italy that we're going to talk about later. And we're going to take a look at Hans Langemann, former BND operative, chief of security for the 1972 Munich Olympics, who provided an alibi for Karl-Heinz Hoffmann in the Munich Oktoberfest bombing of 1980. At the time, former BND operative Hans Langemann had graduated to the Verfassungsschutz, but he was still up to his same old operations and basically provided a very good alibi for Karl-Heinz Hoffmann in the Oktoberfest bombing of 1980 in Munich. We're going to move from the Hans Langemann Verfassungsschutz Karl-Heinz Hoffmann connection back to Mr. Bernd Schmidt. He was the Verfassungsschutz agent who trained the killers who perpetrated the firebombing in Solingen. Bernd Schmidt was an operative for the Operation Gladio, or Operation Stay Behind. That was a NATO contingency plan hatched, as we shall see, by Reinhard Gehlen, the former Nazi Eastern Front intelligence chief, and basically used ostensibly to set up guerrilla groups to fight the Red Army in the event of a successful Soviet invasion of Western Europe, which is not only possible, not only was impossible, but was never realistically contemplated by the Soviets. Nonetheless, that myth, perpetuated by the BND and CIA, dominated much of American and European NATO Cold War thinking. In fact, it appears that Operation Stay Behind, including the Italian wing of that Operation Gladio, was used to a large extent as a front for not only incorporating Nazis and fascists into the intelligence services or into the service of intelligence services, but then in turn to use this guerrilla training program as a front for fascist acts of terror in Italy and elsewhere. So Bernd Schmidt, in addition to having helped to train the murderers of Solingen on behalf of the Verfassungsschutz, was also serving as a Gladio agent. And we're going to take a look at that. Then we're going to go jump once again and review some information from The New Reich by Michael Schmidt about the Reinhard Gehlen connection to Operation Stay Behind and its Italian branch, Operation Gladio. We're then going to take a look at Italy that President Clinton visited recently. Fascism is alive and well and staging a magnificent comeback in Italy. It never really was rooted from Italy, as we have seen in numerous archive shows. There's a San Francisco Examiner article called Ghosts of Fascism Haunt New Italy. Well, what's haunting the New Italy isn't ghosts of fascism at all, but rather fascism itself. Unfortunately, these are not ghosts. We're going to take a look at an op-ed column from the New York Times of May 14th of 1994. It's called, Will Mussolini's Successors Make the Facts Run on Time? This article debunks some of the mythology of Mussolini's Italy, including the assertion that Mussolini made the trains run on time. We will, following that, just review ever so briefly a section from Uncle Sam at Il Duce about Mussolini allegedly making the trains run on time. And then we're going to jump back from the past to the present and possibly even to the future. We're going to take a look at some interesting statements by one of the Italian fascists who is part of the coalition currently dominating Italy. This individual wants to incarcerate gays into concentration camps, or in concentration camps, something which is unfortunately not unfamiliar. and something which not only echoes the past, but which may be a glance ahead to a very sinister and deadly future. Next week, by the way, we're going to go into the Berlusconi Coalition, the Propaganda Douay Lodge, and Italian Fascism at great length with a marvelous article from the British publication Searchlight. That is an anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American publication Spotlight, which is its ideological opposite. We're then going to jump from Italy, where fascism is alive and well and rapidly regaining control of the government, to Japan, where the situation, unfortunately, is much the same. Japanese fascism was reinstituted at the end of World War II, or the institutions behind Japanese fascism were instituted after World War II. And there have been a couple of stories in the media recently talking about just how serious the situation is. We're going to take a look at an article from the San Jose Mercury News from last Sunday, June 5th of 1994, called Japanese Rightists Blurring World War II Legacy. And the Japanese essay contest talking about the World War II history of Japan and Emperor Hirohito's responsibility for that has been significantly blurred by pressure from Japanese reactionaries and Japanese fascists. We're going to take a look at this article about the success that Japanese fascists are enjoying in Japan. And following that, we're going to take a look at another article from the San Jose Mercury of Wednesday, June 8th of 1994. A Japanese politico and a member of the Liberal Democratic Party has found what he considers to be a good role model for their future operations. That role model? Adolf Hitler. Not a new role model, but one that has certainly served very effectively for an awful lot of people. We're then going to take a look at an item from the publication Response put out by the Simon Wiesenthal Center. And unfortunately, one of the best sellers in Japan right now is the book The International Jew by Henry Ford. We're going to take a look at Ford's The International Jew as a bestseller in Japan, and then we're going to replay a section from the original Uncle Sam and the Swastika broadcast done in May of 1980, talking about The International Jew and its effect on Adolf Hitler, now being looked to in certain Japanese political circles as a good role model. After that, we're going to take a look at something we're going to listen to another section of the Uncle Sam and the Swastika broadcast, the conclusion in which James Stewart Martin takes a look at what he felt the future of the United States and Germany and the world was very likely to become. James Stewart Martin was looking ahead from 1950, and he felt that the same transatlantic industrial and financial axis which supported fascism in Europe, Germany in particular, and which frustrated his and others' efforts at effecting a denazification of Germany after World War II, he felt that that axis would not only precipitate a return of German fascism, it has, but that they might also bring fascism to America in the event of a future crisis. And as he put it, the men would do this would not be Nazis, but businessmen, not criminals, but honorable men, that they would bring fascism to America as a calm judgment of business necessity. Well, there was an op-ed column in the New York Times, on May 23rd of this year, by an analyst with the RAND Corporation, indicating the possibility that such a collapse may be imminent, or at the very least that such a possibility is being actively considered by the authorities. This column, again, this is a column by an analyst with the RAND Corporation on the op-ed pages of the New York Times, is called "Is Capitalism Doomed?" A chilling column, and one which may portend the coming of just such a crisis and just such a calm judgment of business necessity. The basic thesis of this analyst, Benjamin Schwartz, is that the only thing, that the main element behind the success of the post-World War II capitalist world has been American military hegemony, which has held the situation together. It is his feeling that American military hegemony and political hegemony is in and of itself counterproductive in the long run, because it bankrupts America, and as the foundation of that post-World War II capitalist cooperation, a bankrupt America threatened worldwide economic calamity. I will get into his thesis in some detail, but it is his contention that the assertion by some that a cooperative situation among the powerful economies and powerful nations of the world could replace American hegemony. Just such a cooperative pattern is extremely unlikely, I think, from taking a look at the record. And taking a look at the record is exactly what we're going to be doing. We are going to return to the Germany Alert newsletter and look at, first of all, an article in Germany Alert talking about the profound anti-Americanism currently holding sway in Germany, something we've spoken about in the past in our discussions with Wilhelm Stauffer of Stauffer Consultants. We will then take a look at a section of Germany Alert called Food for Thought, a phrase I use a lot. After Mercedes-Benz warned American corporate, warned American media that they should not criticize Germany, that if there was editorial criticism of Germany, they would withdraw advertising dollars, Germany Alert asks, indeed, how much criticism of Germany or how much reportage have you seen? Indeed, there has not been very much reportage on things like the Verfassungsschutz connection to the Solingen murders and many of the things that we've seen both from Germany Alert, a very worthwhile publication, and from Wilhelm Stauffer. The last item that we're going to look at in our examination of Germany Alert concerns something which, well, let's just say this augurs for the future. Klaus Kinkel, the aforementioned German foreign minister and former BND chief, has stepped up what the Germany Alert terms an embrace of American political figures. And among the politicians and political figures being courted by Germany in order to give Germany greater influence and greater press coverage or better press coverage in America and to solidify the links between German fascism and American fascism are, check this out, Oliver North, currently a senatorial candidate from Virginia, Pat Buchanan, Dan Quayle, and, get this, Rush Limbaugh. So it looks like Rush Limbaugh will be enjoying the German embrace. I personally think that that is altogether appropriate. Neither Rush Limbaugh nor Germany have ever been able to contain themselves within their proper physical boundaries. They're always spilling over their boundaries, and I think that this is somehow oddly appropriate. The last item that we're going to be looking at in this third and D-Day installment of the Seeds of Nuremberg is an item that I forgot to include in the second installment 3 weeks ago. We're going to take a look at one of the things that I think augurs for the calm judgment of business necessity that James Stuart Martin saw coming in 1950, namely the disarming of the American people. We took a look at Senator Thomas Dodd, his role at Nuremberg, allegations by firearms periodicals and right-wing publications, which I have been unable to disprove, that the Gun Control Act of 1968, which was engineered by Thomas Dodd, a former FBI agent, associate of the American Security Council, and an individual involved with the perpetuation and the propagation of the Bogdan-Stashinsky disinformation about Lee Harvey Oswald, among the people who worked for the Dodd Committee was former Los Angeles police operative and special unit senator operative and, according to a number of sources, U.S. intelligence operative Manuel Pena, one of the key individuals involved with special unit senator that, quote, investigated, unquote, many feel covered up the assassination of Robert Kennedy. Many of the things that I have seen or that I envision on the horizon from the disarming of the public in this country, the creation of things like the hantavirus or the spread of hantavirus, a former biological warfare weapon focal point of the U.S. national security establishment, something that I suspect may be still be under development as a biological warfare weapon. Certainly a rodent-borne vector would be a very good way of getting rid of large numbers of superfluous people, the elimination of civil liberties, the broadening of police powers. All of these things, I suspect, may very well constitute preparations, contingency preparations, for the economic collapse being spoken about in the column by Benjamin Schwartz from the RAND Corporation, not exactly a liberal institution either, by the way, people, and the calm judgment of business necessity made by those honorable men is something that I see on the horizon. We will touch back on the Dodd Committee, its connections to the intelligence world, and the evidentiary tributaries running between the Dodd Committee and elements either involved with or involved with the investigation of our political assassinations. That is what we have on tap for this evening, a D-Day edition, 1 week late, of the Seeds of Nuremberg, my observations on what went down in WW2, what's coming down today, and unfortunately, what's going to be coming down in the future, and I am not at all optimistic. That's what we have on tap. We're going to take a brief musical break, and when we come back, the main body of the prepared portion of tonight's program. It's time now for the main body of the prepared portion of this broadcast. I want to reiterate what I said earlier. If you're new to the broadcast, if you're a relatively recent listener, then please get a hold of the archive shows, because tonight's broadcast is going to exemplify why the archive shows are important. Many of the things that I'm going to be talking about this evening will be highly referential, and without an understanding of some of the relevant documentation, I'm afraid much of what I'm going to be saying this evening will be lost on some of the newer listeners. This is in no way to find fault with them or to dump on them or look down on them, but rather I think it's incumbent on those who really want to understand what's going on to take the time and the effort and, where necessary, the money to delve into the requisite documentation. For the benefit of those who listen to this program on tape, today is Sunday, June 12th of 1994. The observation of the 50th anniversary of D-Day was a week ago. Unfortunately, for the last 2 weeks, I was battling not the Wehrmacht, at least not yet, but a bad case of laryngitis, and so was not in a position to do the programming that I had wanted to do. What I had wanted to do actually turned out to be better delayed, because I've got some very good information that I did not have in my hands even last week. We're going to be doing the third installment. We are doing the third and concluding installment of the Seeds of Nuremberg, an archive show that will be included in the archive shows under that name. What we're going to do now is delve into a very, very important newsletter. I have used it in the past and will continue to use it. It's called Germany Alert. It is one of the very few sources which is telling the truth about the stunning reemergence of German fascism. I don't say the return of fascism to Germany, because fascism never left Germany because of the anti-labor and anti-communist positions of Nazism, and also because of the profound connections between American industrialists and financiers and their counterparts in Germany and the other fascist powers of Europe. Fascism was simply reinstituted with a democratic veneer, and minus a few of the more obvious and obnoxious elements of fascism. And now that the quote evil empire unquote, now that the Soviet Union is no more and the Cold War is over, the veneer is coming off.